This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
What does a cultural revolution look like? What are we dealing with here? We'll talk about that tonight. The great Adam Carolla joins us. Marco Rubio continues to impress. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Let's talk for a moment, just a moment, about China, Mao, the Cultural Revolution. This is going to come back to America, so just stay with me for a moment. Because a lot of people don't understand it. China's a foreign country. You know, you've hit a couple high points. Everybody knows Mao was a bad guy. But what's the timeline look like? So let's lay it out here. The nationalists under Chiang Kai-shek were fighting the communists. This is before World War II. They're fighting, trying to control communist China. The nationalists, because of a bunch of dirty tricks in World War II and other reasons we don't have to get into, the nationalists end up losing that. They retreat to Taiwan. If you're curious why China doesn't call it Taiwan, China considers it Chinese territory. It's because as soon as the nationalists took Taiwan, Mao wanted to go over there and take Taiwan so they could have it all, but they couldn't do it. Long story, either way, that's why Taiwan's still free and China's a dump. You with me? So Mao takes over China. And he does the things communists do. You know, starves 50 million people to death, tortures, kills people, all those standard things. But that's a problem, you see, because the death of 50 million people, and that's a guess. It could be 100, and it could be 30, who knows? The death of that many people cannot be kept quiet. Even with the strict censorship that went on in communist China, you know, we're not talking about the year 1600. Even then, it couldn't be kept quiet. But when you're dealing with the era of the radio, of telecommunication, telephones, it became a global world. We're talking the 50s, the 60s here. You can't keep that quiet. People have televisions. The word is going to get out. And the word gets out that Mao and his plans and policies have caused the greatest human disaster in the history of mankind. By far, by the way. By far. No one else came close to touching it. Mao just killed that many more of his own citizens than the next closest guy, whoever you want to pick for that. Okay? So, what happened? The communists inside China, the other powerful people in the Communist Party, they didn't like the bad pub. They needed someone to pin it on. And it made only sense to pin it on Mao because it was his policies, after all. Now, what happened? Mao went from being the top dog running China to the bench. He was still powerful, but he was no longer the top dog running China. People were criticizing him, but Mao wasn't the kind of guy who would take that quietly. He would take that lightly. So what did Mao need? Well, he's a communist, remember. He has nothing moral against violence and horrible things. They're demonic. It's the religion of Lucifer himself. These people just kill and torture like it's breathing. For Mao, you just kill your way out of it. Communists always, our communists today are no different, by the way. You can just kill your way out of a problem. If there's a group of people causing a problem, just kill them. The climate nutters will tell you this. The race communists will tell you this. These people are the problem. Shouldn't we just kill them? Wouldn't it be better if they died? Communists just believe in killing their way out of a problem. Mao wanted the death of all his political enemies. Not just politicians, but anybody who had raised a stink to his policies. Religious leaders, all these people. This included, I should note, teachers, history professors. Why? Well, China actually has an incredible history pre-communism, this amazing history of all these dynasties and technologies, and they were always such a modern place. And teachers were teaching about that. So Mao needed some killers. Now, what to do? I know when you think of killers, maybe on the darker side of it, you think of maybe someone as part of a cartel. Or on the lighter side, on the good guys' side of it, the military, right? We'll send a Delta Force in there. Doesn't Mao have a Chinese version of Delta Force? But you're thinking the wrong way, you see. There's a big, big, big difference between somebody who kills and somebody who murders. A huge difference. If you were, let's say, put in a room and there were two men standing in that room, one of them big, strong, and tough, he's got tattoos, says the F word a lot, drinks too much beer, and the other guy standing beside him is effeminate, his arms are about that big of a round, he was wearing a pink shirt with pink hair, you might make the mistake of thinking big tattoo guy is the one you should fear, but it is not. It's pink hair freak guy who is much more likely to pick up a gun and shoot you in the face. That's just a fact. Mao understood this. Mao understood human nature very well. If you want an army of murderers, an army of killers, you don't go find the biggest, strongest Chinese people you can find. You go to young people. Now, why? Is it because young people are evil? No, not at all. Young people are easily manipulated because their minds aren't fully developed yet. It's no insult, they're just not. Your mind is still developing. You're still learning right from wrong, what you should do, what you shouldn't do. Young people much more likely to succumb to social contagions. Me? I don't care what my friends are doing. My friends all hung out on Saturday night. I didn't. Why? Because I didn't feel like it. Hey, come out. Nope, I'm good. Got a good book. Young people, on the other hand, they want to do what their friends are doing. Young people are the perfect recruit if you're trying to recruit murderers. And that's exactly what Mao did. He rallied the high school and college kids of China. Legions of them. Gave them a little red book. Remember, my little red book is still available at jessekelly.com, by the way. It's free. But he gave them a little red book with all these sayings in it. Little red book here, little red book there. And you can go look at pictures of all these kids. They're kids. They're babies. Little kids. Wave. Kids. Little red book. Rally behind me, kids. And once he had got them rallied behind him, he turned them loose as the army of murderous savages they were. But what happened from here? Some of the most barbaric stuff you can possibly imagine. Some stuff I won't even say to you because there are children listening. Yeah, they would walk into a Buddhist temple and simply slaughter all the monks and then go tear up grave sites. Sometimes. Sometimes you'd be a school teacher. Happened a lot to school teachers. Maybe it's a Saturday. Knock at your door, you go open it up, and you're grabbed by 50 of your students armed with ball bats, some of them with nails in them, and they drag you out in front of your home in the middle of the street, and they beat you to death in front of everybody in town. Millions of people dead. Who did all that killing during the Cultural Revolution? Is it big, tough tattoo guy? It's kids. High school, college kids. Don't look at this video we're about to show you of anti-ICE protests going on in America. And what you cannot do here is you cannot make the mistake of dismissing them for their age. They don't have any money. Who cares? They're sophomores in high school. What are they going to do? What does it matter? You want to see the demographic that dragged teachers out of their homes and beat them to death with ball bats? Here they are.
This student-led protest outside of Aurora City Hall turned chaotic quick when a man pulled out a Trump flag and allegedly egged students on. Dozens of students chased the man. He was hit and kicked multiple times with rocks, water bottles, and shoes were thrown at him. After several minutes, volunteers, including an East Aurora High School dad who doesn't support Trump, helped the man escape into Fifth Third Bank.
He didn't listen to move away from them. He didn't listen. They went up to him.
Why? Are you threatening me?
No, I need to cry.
Why should I be scared if my family's gonna die? What'd you say?
I said what I said, bitch.
Don't be dismissive of it. They're just kids. They'll grow up one day. The communists in the United States of America have been recruiting and conditioning these kids for years with the intention of using them like an army. I've warned you time and time again, if you have a child in school, you need to go see the teacher and you need to see the classroom. Why is it important to see the classroom? Well, here's a teacher.
Hi, for those of you who don't know me, I'm a high school math teacher and I have a pride flag in my classroom. My job is to teach students math. But it's significantly more than just that. The pride flag is one of the many ways that I show my kids, regardless of who they are, that you are safe in my class. That no matter who you are, who you love, where you come from, you're welcome here. So yeah, I think that makes sense.
You'll understand that video better when you understand that's not a teacher, that's a recruiter. That's a, for lack of a better way to put it, that's a military recruiter. That teacher with the Black Lives Matter flag, the tranny flag, all the other stuff in your child's seventh grade class is not a teacher. It's a recruiter. And they have been recruiting, especially in blue areas, mostly in blue areas, they have been recruiting Cultural Revolution 2.0 soldiers for quite some time. Do not be dismissive of it because of their age. Do not convince yourself they'll grow out of it. If these people have their way, they will have Mao 2.0 here. Better be aware of it, and you better talk to your kid. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. The wonderful Adam Carolla. I used to watch Adam Carolla when I was a kid. The wonderful Adam Carolla is going to join us in just a moment. Now, before he does, let me talk to you about debt. High interest debt weighs you down, doesn't it? You got debt like that, paying 20-30%. Now, you have a mortgage. You know that American financing can get rid of that high interest debt, right? You know that right now mortgage rates are at 3-year lows. You can pay, some people are paying in the fives right now. Do the fives sound better than 25? They can't help you if you don't call them, though. Get a hold of American Financing and just see if they can help you. Look, maybe they can't do anything for you. Maybe they can change the trajectory of your life. AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse or 866-891-2821. We'll be back.
Morally, ethically speaking, it is an atrocity that in a country this wealthy, we have people just on the streets. And we should have we should insist on policies that recognize their full humanity, people who are houseless, and be able to provide them the help and resources that they need. But we should also recognize that the average person, you know, doesn't want to have to navigate around a tent city in the middle of downtown. We're not going to be able to generate support for it if we simply say, you know what, it's not their fault, and so they should be able to do whatever they want, because that's a losing political strategy.
I'm so fascinated by that little clip there for a variety of reasons. Joining me now, Adam Carolla of the great Adam Carolla Show. Adam, I don't know what fascinates me more from that, the hippie gobbledygook of humanity and policies, of course, never with any specifics to get them off the streets, or the subtle or not so subtle shot at Gavin Newsom. I don't know what part of it I love the most, but I'm greatly enjoying it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that clip and I realized, you know, we're in an era of sort of word salad, right? AOC, Kamala Harris, just nothing, jumbled mess of words and verbiage falling out of their mouth. Obama is a word salad chef. These guys are sort of, you know, AOC and Kamala Harris are word salad school cafeteria ladies. They have no skill at it. He's like a Michelin rated word salad chef. He says nothing as well, but it comes out in a way that's much more hard to detect and much more palatable, right? So Obama never says anything. He just says junk. And yes, there's never a solution. There's just, he basically explains both sides. You know, it's like people need to be treated with dignity, but when a mother is pushing a stroller downtown on a sidewalk, she doesn't want to push it through an opium den. Okay. I know. You just explain what is happening, not what the fix is. It's a guy who was a two-term president, so he's supposed to have some fix ideas, but he doesn't. So he's an idiot and a race hustler, but he's skillful that way. I don't know. He's probably taking some digs at Newsom. He probably feels like maybe Newsom is stealing a little bit of his skinny guy crosses his legs way too far thunder or something.
That'll never stop being odd to me how many men in politics do that. That can't be comfortable. So I have a question. Are they dumb? Or are we as a society dumb? Not every individual, of course, because there are all kinds of intelligent people here, but guys like Barack Obama or Gavin Newsom or Kamala Harris, affectionately known as Dome on this show, they wouldn't speak that way if it didn't sell to somebody. Maybe the public doesn't want to hear solutions. Maybe that's the kind of ridiculous word salad crap that actually sells in politics. Isn't that an indictment of us?
Yes, it's a kind of... we've turned into what I like to call a gyno-fascist society. Women have sort of taken over, and women love the endless gobbledygook word salad talk. You know, they like the announcements that no person's illegal, and, you know, fences keep people in, they don't keep people out, and everyone deserves a, you know, seat at the table, and every child deserves world-class health care, but they have no solution. So these people who speak this way are attractive to women mainly, and then guys who cross their legs very deeply. And since guys got off farms and construction sites and mills and coal mines and logging camps, they have had their brains softened as well to live in a world of fantasy and ideas. And there is no rubber meets the road practicality, you know, barn raising kind of thought process that goes on. So their thought process is, we'll leave the border open and only the good needy people will come across the border, and then millions of people come across the border and there's a lot of criminals and terrorists in there, and then we want to weed them out, but we have to do it in a way that's very respectful for them and very humane. I don't know what that answer is, though, because they never explain what the process is. It's just, here are the things that need to happen. I need to get gallbladder surgery, but I don't want to be cut into. Okay? So those are my rules. I'll get gallbladder surgery, but no scalpel shall touch my skin. Okay, that's not a plan. That's impossible. I know you want both those things, but you can't, and it doesn't work that way. But it's a new sort of phase that we're living in of just basically chick think, and then the guys that promote it, Justin Trudeau and Barack Obama and Gavin Newsom, all the deep leg crossers who are signaling to their female base, hey, I'm down with you. People think you know, this is misogynistic or I'm way off or I'm doing it for comedic purposes. I am not. The chickens chick think has come home to roost, and we're living in it. In LA, we're getting beat up by it.
Is this the problem with allowing women the right to vote in the 19th Amendment in general? I mean, I realize that's the least popular subject in the world, but I don't really give a crap who's offended by it. The truth is that people used to vote by household in this country, and the husband and wife would sit down and they would discuss what was best. And now these people laser target young, single, mentally ill females on their 10th Xanax of the day. And the truth is, there's no amount of propaganda these people won't suck in and completely, it'll just turn them into the biggest vicious monsters in the world while thinking they're the good guys. And that's what we're up against. The truth is that there are how many millions of young, single, miserable 22-year-old women out there canceling out your vote? They do.
Yes. They do. And I agree. I mean, look, a lot of people went through it with COVID. You know, I got outvoted by my ex-kooky wife in terms of getting the kids vaccinated or taking your shoes off or putting gloves on before you handled fast food or whatever it was. I just, whatever my vote was, I got outvoted by her dumb vote. And a lot of people did. I got my smart COVID vote got outvoted by a bunch of dumb people who live in California in Los Angeles. So, yeah, it's pretty effective. It'll cancel your vote out for sure.
See, this is why I was always pessimistic, and I told people this over and over again about the how realistic it was that we were ever going to get the concept of mass deportations of people who are here illegally, and it's because of COVID. Because I lived during COVID, and I watched what I thought were normal people wearing paper masks around all day. I watched as they took down the outdoor basketball hoops and told small businesses they weren't allowed to open, but the local weed store was. I watched how quickly, not the authorities who've always been scumbags, the society succumbed to a propaganda yes. campaign like that. And I knew there was not a chance in hell once Lupe started getting bundled up in the back of a car and sent back to El Salvador, I knew there was no way the American public as a whole would withstand it. And I'll tell you what, after what I saw in Minnesota, I was right.
Yeah, they showed a picture of a five-year-old kid wearing Yoda jammies crying, and every woman went, "Get ICE out of Minneapolis." Super easy. Gynofascism. It worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so fix it? Because you can't okay. change this many years of feminization. Can you fix it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Los Angeles burnt to the ground, essentially, or half of it burnt to the ground, and that may have been the bottom for the people who have the pie in the sky ideas, but at a certain point, when the next, you know, we're over the thrill of the first female black mayor in Los Angeles history who was dancing in Ghana while her city burnt to the ground. At a certain point, some of those women live in homes that burnt to the ground. And at some point, you do just want some competent people and some policy. And it takes a burning to the ground, and it takes a stepping over homeless people to walk your kid to school to get there for a lot of these dingbats, but I think we might be there. But unfortunately, it's a process of having to bottom out because none of those dingy women want to step in hobo crap on their way to work, and none of them want to have their home in the Palisades burned down either. So ultimately, they'll think of themselves and maybe quietly vote a different direction this time around.
Speaking of bottoming out, why can't Pete Buttigieg get any traction in the Democrat primary?
You know, well, he's gay, and black folks aren't big fans of gay folk, and they can't say it because they're the ones who are being discriminated against, and we have to remember that white supremacy is really the only form of discrimination that ever takes place in this country. So anytime a black guy punches an elderly Asian woman in San Francisco, we can't dwell on that too long, and this is basically the same thing. They're, you know, they're more religious, more family, and now the Democrats wouldn't call him homophobic. They would call Ted Nugent homophobic. They would call them sort of set in their ways or religious or something, some euphemistic thing for homophobic. But they're not fans. But Buttigieg also doesn't bring anything to the table either. He just talks about how racist bridges are.
No, you're not wrong, Adam. Talk to you soon, my man. I appreciate you. John Doyle has been making waves over the past couple weeks. Why? He's been digging into Black History Month in very, very fascinating ways. We'll talk to John Doyle in just a moment. Before we talk to John Doyle, I want to talk to you about corporate America. Corporate America, for most of my childhood, they didn't participate in politics. They thought it was bad business. And then we woke up one day and the Verizons, AT&Ts, T-Mobiles of the world were sending your money out to communist causes as they burnt down American cities. And we looked around and wondered why. Well, let me explain why. We kept paying them to do it. We never punished them. They got taken over by communists, and the communists did not have their bottom line punished by the removal of our dollars. And that's where Pure Talk comes in. Pure Talk is the patriotic mobile company. You don't need Verizon. You don't need AT&T. You don't need T-Mobile. You'll pay less. They're on the same towers. You keep your phone. You keep your number. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV and switch. We'll be back.
The other side does the mean, angry,
demagoguery,
you know, exclusive, us, them, you know, divisive politics. That's their home court.
Yeah.
Our court is coming together. Our court is, look, you know, a great example. Wasn't political. Bad Bunny's halftime show.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
Well, it resonated. It was smart because it wasn't preaching. It was showing. It was demonstrating and displaying. This is what a community is.
Obama was always so good at that. Is still good. So good at that. He does the most political things in the world and then looks at you in the eye and tells you to stop opposing him and being political. Joining me now, somebody I've been noticing a lot lately, super sharp. I have a feeling this guy's going to be around for quite some time. John Doyle, host of the wonderful John Doyle Show. John, Obama, as much as I may despise Obama, and I most definitely do, the dude's really good at that, man. So smooth and so slick at selling that divisive crap.
Yeah, he really is. I guess it's a very useful skill when your political platform is just being completely misaligned with reality to be a talented liar. Of course, you know, it's important for them to come out and say these things now and try to appeal to a kind of consensus and coming together now that the Republicans seem to finally be in our teething stages where we seem to actually want to play the game of politics and actually fight back and secure some victories. Now they're the ones on the back foot saying, hey man, why don't we all just come together? It doesn't have to be an ugly fight. Whereas in the latter half of his administration, as we all know, they were very willing to politicize everything and make everything into a fight and make normal Americans feel as though they're aliens or immoral for just retaining the basic attitudes that Americans have always had towards these issues. And so for in that time period, it was very common for conservatives to be the ones to say, hey, let's just talk it out and have a dialogue, which is not language of strength. That is typically language of surrender. So while I don't buy anything he's saying, because of course it's a lie, I am optimistic just by virtue of him saying that, because it means that they understand that they're losing pretty badly right now.
I am as well, and I'm glad to hear you say that, optimistic. It's easy to point to the failures on the right, and I do so all the time. I'm not complaining about that at all, but the right's general mentality is changing when it comes to the left. No longer do I hear as much of this well-meaning, well, they're just naive, they don't understand, well, if I could just talk to them. We're finally starting to come around to the fact, no, these people are actually demonic, and they're going to destroy everything unless you stop them. It warms my heart to see it.
Yeah. Not only that, they would willingly do so if it meant that they could just stand atop the pile of ashes and say, nah, 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 boo, boo, yes. I bet you wish this didn't happen. Like, we saw this under the Biden administration. They are very willing to accept not only just materially lower standards of living, but also just like straight up chaos and rioting, things which on paper you would never support, if it means that they get to feel like they get to really shove it in the face of their like conservative uncle or something, or people that they disagree with on Facebook.com. Like, they are perfectly willing to kamikaze our entire civilizational project if it means they can like get back at somebody who maybe embarrassed them in a political argument one time. It's just extremely childlike and petty behavior. And the sooner we get these people out of power and influence, the better.
They're always just selling revenge. Speaking of which, let me introduce everybody to a judge who got some play last week on this show. One of these DEI judges who just has a heart for the rapists. Here she was.
But Judge Davis thought the jury's recommendation was too long. She feels he hasn't mentally matured yet and never had a real shot at getting any help early in life.
But if you were to come in here And instead of being hurt and angry, which is what this court hears, right, as a 20-year-old African-American male that has been, you know, experienced this society, et cetera, and you would show that, yes, okay, this is the situation, this is who I am, I don't want to be this person anymore. I don't want to be in jail forever.
Thompson repeatedly stated he did not care, not about his sentence, the victim, or her family. But Judge Davis emphasized she's the one that holds the pen, and regardless of what the media may think, she applies the law. To her, 65 years was an extremely long time. As she puts it, it's his whole life, one she doesn't believe should be spent entirely behind bars.
John, these people see themselves as warriors for a higher cause. Now, hers is obviously a race war cause, but that's how they see themselves, and it's important that we know that's how they see themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And you know, it's one thing to kind of buy into the leftist view of how crime works, which is, well, crime is not something that people just have a commitment to. Sometimes it's because they're in a tough state. You know, it's like the opening sequence of Aladdin, where you're just really hungry, and so maybe you swipe a loaf of bread that didn't belong to you. That's one thing, and maybe I could agree with that, even though I probably wouldn't. It's a completely different thing to be like this gentleman who decided to kidnap a woman at gunpoint and take her to an elementary school and sexually assault her and even sodomize her and then take her to an ATM and rob her and then continue to sexually assault her. That is not behavior that can be explained by simply lack of material resource. There is nothing we can do at that point in terms of giving you more schooling or better access to nutrition that would compel an individual to not pursue patterns of behavior like that. And everybody up until 5 minutes ago seemed to understand that. I mean, you have obviously punishments for criminals, not only to bring justice to victims, but to deter that kind of insane behavior. And when you have these like lax on crime policies, all it tells people who do have some personal commitment to crime and chaos is that they're actually not going to have to face consequences for that. And they can even go as far as to basically tell the judge to go screw themselves to their face, and they will still get their sentence cut in half. And there will be this benefit of the doubt given because, well, you have the whole, you're the rest of your life ahead of you. It's like, what about the life of the victim? I mean, you know, thank God she's still alive, but I mean, her life is ruined. She's going to have that trauma for the rest of her life. She'll always be living that down. And I can only imagine the impact of her seeing the guy who did this to her now have his sentence cut in half by this judge who apparently knows better than the jury of the peers, which even that, frankly, you know, when we had the concept of the jury of the peers, that was when we were all a unified Anglo-Saxon Christian society. It's very difficult to have that kind of common law tradition in an increasingly divided and diverse country where you have, for example, Black Americans declaring that they have their own Independence Day, they have their own national anthem, and we see this in the data too. You know, you have juries of Black Americans who are more likely to convict white people for the same crime, more likely to let off Black people for the same crime, whereas white jury studies actually show they're perfectly impartial between convicting or letting off Black or white criminals. And so that's all because of this narrative that this judge even alludes to, where she's like, well, because you've had this experience. What are you talking about? You're supposed to be a judge. You're supposed to be impartial, interpret the law. You're not interpreting the law as it's written. You're interpreting it within the context of this narrative, which you've just made up in your head about how supposedly America has kept down a Black young men. And so they're going out and raping people at gunpoint. It's just literally the most insane thing I've ever seen in my life, which maybe I haven't been around long enough for that to mean a whole lot, but it's just unbelievable.
Well, at least we still have heroes in this country. We've had heroes. Heroes like Rosa Parks, who just went home from work one day, and she just tired, wanted to put her feet up, got on a bus, and she was aggressively oppressed by a racist bus driver. John, talk about Rosa.
Yeah, I mean, I learned that story when I was 5 years old. I learned that I am at 5 years old smarter than my grandparents, who just hated people for looking differently than they do. And we learn about Rosa Parks as this story of this tired seamstress who just wanted to go home from work, and she was antagonized by a racist bus driver, and she refused to stand up, and then she was arrested for this. And this became obviously a big part of the civil rights movement. What people don't know is that she was a trained activist, and that was actually a planned publicity stunt. She had been working with the NAACP for over 10 years at this point. She and her husband were attending Communist Party USA meetings. This was all a plan, and actually it was a replication of a prior stunt which had occurred with a black woman who then it was discovered she was pregnant out of wedlock, and so it was thought that she would not be as good of a figurehead for the movement, and so she was actually replaced with Rosa Parks. And you can actually see a lot of black Americans are upset about this because they think that part of the reason this was done is because Rosa Parks presented a lighter complexion than this black woman who she replaced, who I guess was a darker skin tone. And so a lot of black Americans think that this was itself kind of racist, and it was only done because Rosa Parks looked whiter, quote unquote. But yeah, the entire thing was done to present this narrative that you know, white people were going around harassing black people for no reason, and one day one tried to stand up and then she was arrested for it. That's actually not exactly what happened. The way the buses were segregated, where you had essentially a white section of the bus, a middle section for white or black passengers, and a black section of the bus. And the white section of the bus was full, and the black section was not. And there were a bunch of white passengers who wanted to get onto the bus. And so the bus driver went and was going to move the white sign back to expand the section, since he couldn't tell them to go sit in the black section, since at the time that would have been illegal. And so he asked Rosa Parks and a few black guys, hey, would you mind moving to the open seats in the black section so that these middle seats can open up so we can put the white people here, since I have to expand the white section? Because the only seats that were available at the time on the bus were in the black section. And the black guys were like, okay, yeah, sure. And Rosa, because this was her plan, said no, and so the bus driver eventually was like, okay, well, I'm going to move the sign. So he moved the sign. Now she's sitting technically in the white section, which was technically illegal at the time, and so she was arrested for that, which, again, that was all part of her plan to cause this kind of publicity stunt. And the reason we bring this up isn't because we're supporting segregation. It's just because we want people to understand that everything about the civil rights movement was not about actually respecting the dignity of black Americans or even looking out for their well-being. It was deliberately this, like, communist-aligned movement meant to replace equality of opportunity with equality of outcome, with this, like, legally enshrined state-enforced equality, Martin Luther King replacing George Washington as kind of the founder of the country. And that's where we've been since, which is why if you look at the fruits of the civil rights movement, it did not produce more equality, it did not produce a better state for black America. All of those things have actually just gotten worse. But what it did do is reorient our national focus away from meritocracy and excellence and towards just this, like, blind pursuit of equality and just throwing money at things and all these, like, DEI programs which have done nothing except divide people, hurt people. And so yeah, the whole thing is just a lie.
I'm glad you're doing it, John. You keep it up, brother. I think you got a really bright future. Appreciate you. All right, Marco Rubio. I was never a fan back in the day. He's winning me over. We'll talk about that in a moment. Before we talk about that, did you wake up this morning fired up and ready to go? It's Monday, baby! Or were you dragging? You know you can wake up feeling rested every day, right? That's an option for you. Now that we have Dream Powder from Beam, it's an option for you. I know that everybody has something to help them sleep. You can get a pill at the gas station, or the doctor will prescribe you one. There's a pill, there's a pill. What about natural things? Natural things are always what we should do. This is a cup of hot chocolate with natural things in it, reishi and magnesium and all kinds of things. Natural things. You just sip on a cup of hot chocolate before bed. You go to sleep. You wake up in the morning, ready to roll. That's Dream Powder. Go to shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. All right, so I don't do very many of these things, all right? When I say these things, it's going to be talking about how impressed I am with the politician. There are impressive politicians, I admit that. I generally think most of them are scum. And as I've always told you, use them. Use them to get what you want, get where you're going, and then discard them. And I'm not saying anything different about Marco Rubio, who we're about to highlight, but I do think we have to acknowledge that there are some who are statesmen, and there are some who really improve over time. I remember when Marco Rubio first came up in politics, came up through the Florida State Legislature, ended up getting elected Senate in Florida, and he was this kind of new, you know, the young, good-looking conservative guy, and everyone thought he was going to be a star. And then he gets to Washington, D.C., and about 5 minutes afterwards, he gets seduced by the thought of amnesty, as so many of them do, comes out, tries to pass some big amnesty bill. Well, what that did was destroyed his reputation, at least on the right. He was still senator and all that, but everyone kind of laughed him off now. Rubio's the amnesty guy. And I've been very hard on Rubio over the years. And to keep in mind, I don't know him. We don't text. I've never met Rubio. At least I don't think I've ever met Rubio in my life. But it's hard not to look at the things he says, the actions he takes now, and say to yourself, man, someone helped him, or he's just growing up. But I love... One of the things I love most about when we get a patriotic president, a patriotic administration, is they take that overseas. Whenever you have a Democrat administration and they go overseas, they're going to crap all over America and American values. Marco Rubio has been an excellent statesman for this country. Here he was in Munich.
We want allies who can defend themselves so that no adversary will ever be tempted to test our collective strength. This is why we do not want our allies to be shackled by guilt and shame. We want allies who are proud of their culture and of their heritage, who understand that we are heirs to the same great and noble civilization, and who together with us are willing and able to defend it. Armies fight for a people. Armies fight for a nation. Armies fight for a way of life. And that is what we are defending, a great civilization that has every reason to be proud of its history.
I've said this repeatedly. I don't know why it's so hard for some to comprehend it, so let me repeat it again. A visa, no one's entitled to a visa. There is no constitutional right to a visa. Okay, a visa is a permission to enter our country as a visitor. If you enter our country as a visitor, and as a visitor in our country, be it a student, a tourist, a journalist, whatever you want to be, and you undertake activities that are against the national interest, the national security of the United States, we will take away your visa. In fact, if we knew you were going to do it, we probably wouldn't have given you your visa.
That's awesome. That's how I want American statesmen talking about America overseas. No more of this America sucks crap. No more of this we're just global citizen thing. No. We are great. We are a great civilization. We don't apologize for it. And don't you dare think you're going to visit and crap on this place or we will kick you out. That's awesome. And I'll tell you, I still remember how he spoke at Charlie Kirk's funeral, Charlie Kirk's memorial. Now, this is something that's become more and more common now, and I love it, but how many times prior to this have you heard American politicians speak so boldly about this?
One of the things he wants us to take away from this, from all of this, is the following. His deep belief that we were all created, every single one of us, before the beginning of time, by the hands of the God of the universe, an all-powerful God, who loved us and created us for the purpose of living with him in eternity. But then sin entered the world and separated us from our Creator. And so God took on the form of a man and came down and lived among us. And he suffered like men. And he died like a man. But on the third day he rose unlike any mortal man. And to prove any doubters wrong, he ate with his disciples so they could see and they touched his wounds. He didn't rise as a ghost or as a spirit, but as flesh. And then he rose to the heaven, but he promised he would return. And he will. And when he returns, because he took on that death, because he carried that cross, we were freed from the sin that separated us from him. And when he returns, there will be a new heaven and a new earth, and we will all be together, and we are going to have a great reunion there again with Charlie and all the people we love. Thank you, and God bless you.
That's awesome. Again, I want to emphasize, I'm not a fan. I will never be a fan, but it's hard not to be impressed with someone who's turning into a wonderful statesman for this country, statesman for Christ, and it's hard not to see I mean, I know he's been there for a while, so we're talking about Marco Rubio like he's brand new. It's hard, though, not to see a bright political future for Marco Rubio. It's been wonderful to watch. All right. It's also wonderful to watch communist politicians give themselves Indian names. We have light in the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And the reason we have a light in the mood is we cannot forget to laugh. And it's really important that you laugh and mock these ridiculous demonic communists, because one, it makes your day better. It just brings some levity to your day. And two, they are so mock-worthy. They're so deranged. They're just crazy people. I'm going to play you a video. And before I play you this video, I want you to understand that this lady is not just some kook on the street corner. This lady is the lieutenant governor of the state of Minnesota. These people have gone from just being kooks on the street corner to rising to high office in this country, and all we can do is just laugh.
So my Ojibwe name is Gijiwewedomokwe, which means speaks in a loud and clear voice woman. I am so grateful for my community. And, you know, I am a member of the White Earth Nation, which is the largest tribe in Minnesota.
I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.